Around Comics, episode 45. Chicago, this is Around Comics, a weekly roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I'm joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the producer of the show, Brian Salazar.
Hello.
And we have our Around Comics regular, Mr. Tom Caters.
This is like eating that second half of that delicious calzone that you put in the refrigerator on Monday, and you're drunk and starving. You want more John Byrne, and you're going to get it.
As Thomas so eloquently said, we are posting the second half of John Byrne interview.
Too much Byrne for one show.
Was he not
Byrne
amazing?
Victims.
If you listen to the first half of the John Byrne interview, which we certainly hope you did. If you did not, it was on Monday's episode. Definitely go back and listen to that first. The first half was kind of your basic questions, a lot of history of his work and thoughts about, you know, fans and all that good stuff. But the second half, we really kind of dig under that top layer and get into some really fun stuff. So before we get to the interview, I do want to remind everyone that Around Comics is recorded every Friday from 7 to 9 at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you. You never know when we're talking to people like John Byrne, which makes it fun. We have our September contest, which is our trivia contest at the site. Go to the show and then drop down menu to the contest, or we have a link on the forum. Sal, tell folks a little bit about the contest.
It's a daily trivia challenge. It's 10 random comic book related trivia questions. Every day you can go and play it. You can only play it once a day, and the more answers you get correct in the shorter amount of time, the more points you get, and at the end of the month it'll tally up all the points, and whoever wins a nice prize package from Dark Tower
Comics. I can't wait to win that.
We are
employees of Around Comics.
Yeah. Judge whether or not you believe what we say against our scores.
And not only that, you get the, you know, bragging rights of like kicking everybody's ass in comic book knowledge. So if you know,
I am the tallest midget.
Yeah, you know what the hell? I'm gonna lose. I already know. I suck at it. But
Dark Tower is sponsoring that, and they're gonna donate a nice prize pack. And Tom is gonna send out another 10 quarter issues, hand selected.
Stephanie Mangle doesn't send in that Green Lantern thing. Someone's gonna get a welcome back, Cotter.
Oh, man. Stephanie Mangold is working on something right now. She sent me an email. So everyone out there, please check out Hey Supergirl at SilverBulletComics.com. We love Stephanie. The listener LCS challenge, go download our PDF flyer, print that out, and see if your local comic shop will put that up. If they do, we will give them a shout out, like we did for Dan C., Papercut in Minnesota, and The Source Comics and Games at 1601 West Larpenteur Avenue in Falcon. Avenue in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. The hotline, we had one.
1-888-65-GCAST. Call us, leave us a voicemail, just like Equinox, and you'll be on the show, too.
Yes. Stop being so passive. Participate.
Yes. Vince B., Equinox, they have been our participants so far, and
Amy
we
Liff
love them.
Left us a nice
Amy Liff, yes, she was our first international caller. Shop
and
at
I'm
around.
I'm calling out, I want to call out, I can't think of her name off the top of my head. But there's another girl that was, like, on our Frapper page, because we have a Frapper page where you can go and, like, put in your zip code, and it'll put a little marker for you on the map. And she was the first girl on the and actually still the only girl on our Frapper page.
Shock.
But but she, I can't think of her name off the top of my head now, but I'm calling her out. Leave us a voicemail. We want to hear from you.
All right.
Well, that's real nice. The one girl has all, now we all know where to find her. That's really good.
Yeah.
That's D. Drace, by the way. We didn't introduce him.
I'm going to find you.
Dustin just sat down.
I know what zip code you live in.
Don't worry about it.
Shopping Around Comics.
So. We have our Shopping Around Comics, our Cafe Press store, where you can buy shirts and thongs.
Steins.
And
Steins.
And
coffee mugs.
And around comic stuff if you want
to. You can get someone to draw a round comic symbol in clouds in the sky, a sky rider.
Sure.
That's on there.
A baby.
How much before somebody gets an around comics tattoo? That's what I want to know.
No, it's coming.
Yeah, it's coming. I feel bad for them.
We are the coolest podcast in comics, I think. I mean, just. We might not be the best or the most informative, but we're the coolest.
We're not the best well-planned or researched.
Yeah, we don't necessarily have the best guests.
Oh, hush. Podcast Alley, it is a new month. Please drop by the Alley and give us some love. And my favorite, the iTunes Music Store review.
Yes.
As I'm now going to say every episode, be as cool as Andy Parks. Leave us a review.
It's hard to do.
All right.
But only good ones.
I know that everyone has downloaded this in anticipation of the second half of the John Byrne interview. So
you won't be disappointed.
Let's go there.
John Byrne.
To the interview desk.
Dun, 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 dun.
Ba, ba, ba.
With Katie.
La.
I'd like to ask you about something that's sort of been made into legend or at least hearsay, if nothing else, is your relationship with Chris Claremont when you were working on X-Men. I mean,
snort.
What? You, I mean, I think you've said in the past that it wasn't exactly a great relationship, but there was friction there. Do you think, and not to get into that, unless I'm misquoting you in any way, but do you think that that friction between a writer and artist or an artist and writer can be beneficial to a project sometimes?
Oh, sure. I mean, apparently there was a fair amount of friction between Stan and Jack.
No.
I have never heard that.
I've never heard that.
I mean, back when they were producing the stuff that we all think there must have been this perfect synthesis happening, they were fighting with each other. And same with Lee and Ditko. It goes to Gilbert and Sullivan and all these things where you have two people who are not quite meshing, but what comes out is the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Chris and I were basically, we're constantly trying to outdo each other. That was the thing, you know. It was a competition that I think the fans benefited from greatly because, obviously, these are comics that are legendary. I don't think they deserve that status, but that's the status they have. So we must have been doing something right.
Hey, they're in an omnibus, so they have to be pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Well. With that being the case, do you think there's ever a chance of you working with Peter David?
No.
Had to ask it.
I had to ask.
No.
Do you think?
Well, it's like Chris and I were from opposite sides of the same planet. Peter David and I are from different planets.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
Can you speak a little bit to the difference between like a really, truly great collaboration and like a truly great solo sort of project? Like, is there a different feeling from that when you're working with someone and it feels like the whole is greater than the parts?
I remember Mike Grell summed it up perfectly years and years ago when he said that the best thing about writing for himself was that Mike Grell, the writer, never asked for anything that Mike Grell, the artist, couldn't draw.
Okay.
And I always thought that was rather a brilliant observation, because it's very true, you know. It's like we do kind of challenge each other. Howard Mackey, when he and I were doing Spider-Man together, Howard would take great delight in coming up with stuff that he knew would be hard for me to draw. And I'd get his plot and flip through it, and I'd, you know, immediately phone him up and say, "You son of a bitch," you know. And it was great because it was challenging me all the time, and I have to sort of constantly remind myself that as the writer and artist, I do need to challenge the writer does need to challenge the artist just as much as would be the case if it was two different people. So,
wow.
Speaking of the process, and when you were working on, say, X-Men, were you working in the Marvel method, or was that a full script method? And then
it was kind of a warped version of the Marvel method. What happened was we started out with plots. Chris and I had worked together before on Iron Fist. Obviously, the first few issues of Iron Fist were done full script, and the plots, and then the plots became simpler and simpler. And then on X-Men, we started out with written plots, and then we ended up with what we call phone plots, which is where Chris and I would get on the phone and spend an awful lot of Marvel's money on long-distance phone calls, and we'd work something out, and nothing would ever actually be on paper. I would call, say, Roger Stern, who was the editor, and say, okay, this is what we've got worked out, and Roger and I would pound the bumps out of it, and then I would draw it, and then that would go to Chris, and Chris would script it.
So when you were working completely written and, you know, when you were doing Fantastic Four, how did you go about, did you just sit down and do those pages, or did you write a script first and then go back and
I've done, when writing for myself, I've done it just about everywhere you can imagine. When I started on the Fantastic Four, I would just come up with a plot, and then I would draw the whole book, and then I would script it, just as if I was literally two different people, the penciler and the writer. Over the years, when I started doing my own lettering, I started writing myself a full script first, you know, the computer lettering that I was doing. And over the years, I found that took me into some places where I shouldn't have gone. It began to get a little too novelistic and a little too wordy because I was sitting there writing rather than drawing. And so on stuff like Doom Patrol and The Demon, I went back to as if I was two different people and drew the whole thing first and then went back and scripted it. So there's, I've collaborated with John Byrne in many different ways.
Do you hate John Byrne?
Oh, John Byrne is such a fucker, man.
We're going to edit that out.
Yeah, you know, no.
That's gonna be a new bumper.
That's going to start the show, I think.
hey, we
John Byrne, a fucker.
From John Byrne.
Put that in the news this week. People keep passing me notes here, so I'm actually going to have a couple people ask you some questions. So the first one is the manager at Dark Tower Comics, Mr. Mark Beatty.
How you doing, Mr. Byrne?
I'm good. How are you?
I haven't the slightest. Yeah, I got it's basically a two-part question. One is, did you always have a lot of influence over whatever project you were doing, you know, as far back as like Iron Fist or Marvel Team Up, any of the books you did earlier?
Not so much, no. I mean, when I started, the term I use these days and I used to use back then is art robot. I was strictly the art robot. Like when I was doing the Charlton stuff, Space 1999, and really in the Chopper Bunch, they would just send me scripts and I would draw it. Then came Doomsday Plus One, and I made a couple of minor changes in an issue. And I talked to the writer, Joe Gill, and I said, you know, I made a couple of minor changes. I hope you don't mind, when I was lettering it and drawing it. And he said, oh, you know, do whatever you like. Change whatever you like. I don't care. So I said, okay, and started just writing and rewriting and changing everything in sight. The early days on Iron Fist, Chris and I worked off full script, so I didn't have any input. And then slowly a little bit more and more input. And then again on X-Men, we started out with written plots and then went to the phone plots. And then toward the end, when I started getting co-plotter credit, I was having more and more and more input. So it's really been sort of over the arc of my career, I've had greater and greater input into what we're working on. Up until just recently, when really kind of just to see if those muscles still work, I've been taking on projects that are where I'm not writing it. And like Gail Simone, for example, on Action Comics, was working full script. So I just took the script and drew what she told me to draw. And that was kind of like, how would you describe it? It's kind of like something to refresh yourself between courses in a meal. It really felt interesting. It felt good to have a different part of my brain working. So here's a different set of artistic problems for me to solve. Not the kind of problems I would set for myself, but the kind of problems that somebody else will set for me. Problems not being used in a negative sense here. And so, you know, it has been a question of when do you drop into my career? At what point do you drop into the last 30 years? You'll probably get a different degree of how much I'm involved in the final product.
Before Mark asks you the second part of that question, I wanted to touch because you mentioned Gail and the work you've done with her, and you know, I've very much enjoyed the first three issues of the All New Atom, and I was very sad to hear that that's all you're doing on that book. Why
yeah,
is that?
Yeah, that's how it turned out. We weren't really sure going in how many I'd be there for. I knew I was doing Startup. I thought maybe, as with Action, I might be there for 9, I might be there for 12, I might be there for 6. Turned out to be 3, so...
Did you want to continue on with that? I mean, was that something that was that a decision by DC then?
Well, I pretty much got where I felt about as far as I could go. I mean, I could have drawn another 3 issues, but it would have been just for artistic continuity, really. That the project had fulfilled all my needs within 3 issues.
Well, I know everyone here has really enjoyed that. So far, so.
Yeah,
it's my pick of the week.
Yeah, it is Tom's pick of the week.
All right, oh, cool.
Okay, Mark, you had another question.
Yeah, the other part was basically who did you enjoy working with in comics the most?
Archie Goodwin. I only did those however many it was 6 or 9 or whatever issues of Wolverine
yeah.
With Archie, but boy, Archie was just so damn good. He was so professional. He was so smart. His stories were so clever. I remember I got his first script, or his plot, actually written plot, for our first issue of Wolverine together, and just I read through it and just sat back and going, wow, you know, this is what it's supposed to be. Everything was tight and precise, and there was no fat, and it was just wonderful. Yeah, Archie was great.
Was there anybody you absolutely hated working with?
why do you keep
who did I hate
him?
Working with?
John Byrne.
Well, there's been a couple of jobs recently where I've been, I won't name names, but I've been given full scripts by people who really aren't familiar with the form, comic books, and it tends to be people who come from outside and who come from writing movies and writing TV and stuff like that, and so they write a movie, and they put all the stuff into it that a movie would have, like the actors walking around and the camera moving around, and basically make all the mistakes that a newbie comic book writer tends to make, not realizing, you know, it's still, there's something I was working on just the other day, and I was talking to Terry Austin again about this, and I said, okay, this guy's written me a scene where the main character is suddenly frozen in his tracks. So he's not moving. And Terry, you mean as opposed to every other panel? I said, yeah, pretty much. You know, it's like...
Yeah, there's no wavy lines. There's no, you know...
Yeah, well, that's it. You have to fall back on the cliches of putting a little boing around the guy to indicate that he suddenly can't move. But it's funny that when you get these things. There was a... that fill-in issue of Hawkman that I did a couple years ago now. And there was a scene in that where... In the script where Hawkman comes out of an elevator, zooms out of an elevator, and flies between the legs of a guy who's standing in front of the elevator.
What?
And I got to that page, and I kind of went, has this guy ever seen Hawkman? Does he know what Hawkman looks like? Does he know that he's got these things the size of piano, grand piano tops strapped to his back? So I cheated, you know, and didn't actually draw what he asked for. But I was really tempted to draw just Hawkman, the guy, and speed lines going between the guy's legs and let the readers figure out how the hell he did it without knocking the guy over.
Nice. We last week we talked with Andy Parks, a phenomenal anchor and writer, and the topic was multi-purpose creators, and we got on the subject of people that do both, write and draw, and the subject of TV and movie writers and novelists that are now writing comics came up, and Andy was very adamant about, you know, comics are their own medium, and you really have to work within what comics do and really understand that to achieve what you want to.
That's very, very true. That's absolutely true. Far too many people, especially these guys who are coming in from Hollywood, they think that, you know, I can write, I've written a successful TV show, therefore I can write comics. Comics is easy. Well, no, comics have their own language, and it's different. It sort of looks like a movie, kind of looks like a storyboard, but it isn't. And, you know, over my career, I've had people say, oh, John, you should go to Hollywood and do storyboards. And I say, I'm not trained to do storyboards. You know, can you imagine watching a movie where the camera moves around as much as it does on a page that I've drawn? You'd be seasick. You know, I'm having to have the camera dodge and weave and jump and bounce because I'm trying to create dynamics on a flat page. So it's a whole different movies and comics and TV and comics. They're close cousins, but they're not the same. And people don't understand that.
That's a perfect way of saying it. Well, we have another one of our forum members that's come in. This is Dustin Drace here in Chicago. So, Dustin, you had a question for Mr. Byrne?
Hi, Mr. Byrne. How you doing?
Hi there.
You'd mentioned working on Wolverine, as a couple people had posted on the forum. Essentially, right before you came on, Wolverine was almost set to die. They were going to kill him off as a character, and I think that, you know, between you and Dave Cockrum, you guys really brought him as a character to life. Was he a character that you were particularly fond of? I mean, obviously he's become a major staple in the Marvel Universe. You know, do you feel that you had a hand in that?
Well, the funny part about that was that when I first started on the X-Men, the star of the book was Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler was Dave's favorite character. He was a character he created. And he was getting all the focus. And Chris and Dave freely said they couldn't figure out what to do with Wolverine. They just didn't have a clue what to do with Wolverine. So they weren't going to kill him off, because you didn't kill characters off in those days. But they were going to have him leave. They were going to have him get him out of the book, have him go back to Canada or whatever. And I sort of wrapped myself in the flag and said, you're not going to get rid of the only Canadian. You know, that was important to me back then. I've lived in the States now longer than I lived in Canada, so my opinions have shifted. But I basically said, no, you're not going to get rid of the only Canadian. I'll show you what's interesting about this character. And I sort of, every book I do, I adopt a character to be my character in the book. In the case of the X-Men, it was Wolverine, and, you know, I look back now and regret it, you know.
it's
all my fault. Oh, God.
After you found a way to use him, everyone else found a way to use him, too.
Yeah.
Well,
Howard Chaykin has always said that the death of comics is all my fault, because I'm the one who created this sort of way of thinking, superstar, Marvel, DC, whatever it is that we live in these days. And I go, no, I didn't.
I'm not taking
it. That wasn't me.
Well, have you seen any of the X-Men movies that have come out? And if so, what do you think about them?
I haven't seen the third one, because I wait for cable. I've seen the first two. I thought there were some moments. When they do comic book adaptations, just in general, it tends to be, I sit there and watch it, and there'll be one moment, and I'll go, oh, damn, you know, if only the whole movie had been like that. And it's often little things, like in the first one, I thought that Magneto's plastic prison was absolutely brilliant. And I sat there going, damn, why didn't we think of that? That's so cool. But I thought they were horribly miscast and just not very good movies, I thought. And it was sort of fun to see, you know, here's what Cyclops Beam would look like, okay, but here's Wolverine being 6'4" and a pretty boy, which isn't really what I had in mind for the character. And then, of course, at the end of the second one, when there was that suggestion of Phoenix, and a number of people online and at cons, they said, so, you know, it's going to be Dark Phoenix. What do you think of that? You think that's cool? And I sort of said, well, it's going to depend on whether it's like the first Spider-Man movie, where they take a story that was 2 years in the making and turn it into 2 hours and give it a happy ending. You know, so I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know if they do that.
Hold on.
So. Well,
we love the comic movies, and, you know, just because, you know, we grew up watching or, you know, reading this stuff, and it's finally a chance for us to see it. And we've even said before, the movie can stink, but we still love it because it's a chance for us to see it. Did you see Sin City, or were you ever a fan of that?
I saw Sin City. Sin City, I will forever hold up anytime some bozo from Hollywood says, well, you know, we have to make changes. I'm going to pull out Sin City and say, no, you don't.
Bingo. Absolutely. Absolutely.
No, because Sin City is that's it. That's what they should be doing with comic book movies. And they come close every once in a while. I mean, I liked Batman Begins. I hate the rubber suit, but I liked everything else about it.
Yeah.
So it can be there. And there were even elements of the Spider-Man movies. I liked what they did with the costume. I remember saying online that when I saw the first trailer, I was blown away because all the times I've drawn that character, and it had never occurred to me how fast he would be going when he's swinging between the buildings. And that was extraordinary, and that was amazing. And there was a nice little bit in the second one. I've drawn Dr. Octopus 100 times, and I'm always trying to figure out how he can do all the stuff he's doing because he's basically just a guy, you know, soft, mushy bones and flesh. And I noticed in the scene where, the very first scene where he throws the cab back down the street, and he's braced himself. Two of his arms have gone back behind him and braced him. And I said, "Oh, you see? They're thinking it out. That's really cool." And that's those moments that I talk about where I look at it and I say, "Oh, man, if only the whole movie had been like that."
Yeah.
Well, so I'm real grumpy. I'm a real purist about these things. I want them to be literal translations of the comics.
Well, a lot of times you can't do that. I think that Michael is Chabon. I always mispronounce his name, Chabon or Chabon. I think his screenplay for the second Spider-Man movie was fantastic, and for a wide audience anyway. So, Sal.
Well, I was just going to say it could have been worse, and you know, Wolverine could have a British accent like he did, or an Australian accent.
Australian accent like he did the cartoon.
In the cartoon.
I am Matt Fraction, and this is Around Comics, and it's a podcast that you listen to on your pod, and it's casted to your pod, and you can listen to it, and it's sweet. And I love it, and I love you.
I was going to ask you about Captain America, and more specifically about Bucky. I know reading on your forum, you had talked about when you and Roger Stern were working on Cap, you had thought about the idea of bringing Bucky back, and then quickly decided not to. I don't know if you're aware, but Ed Brubaker
spoilers
has recently brought Bucky back.
Oh, yes, I know. Nobody dies forever. I'm waiting for Uncle Ben to star in Tales of the Zombie.
you brought Pa Kent back, so.
And well, he brought him back.
In my version, he didn't die.
Okay. Well, you did bring
Iron Fist back.
Yellow booties and all.
Well, Iron Fist had such a crappy death. Come on. You know, he gets beaten to death while he's asleep. Come on, man. I said, no way. Not for the Kun Loon kid.
Well, are you aware that there is a new The Immortal Iron Fist series getting ready to come out again?
No.
It's Ed Brubaker.
By the guy who brought back Bucky.
By the guy who brought back Bucky. which we are big Ed Brubaker fans. And actually, if you do have a chance to read how Ed brought back Bucky, I thought it was done very well. So I'd be interested to hear your comments on it if you ever have the chance to read
well,
it.
Well, see, the problem, though, here's the problem. This is why Roger and I decided not to bring back Bucky. We had a really good, poignant, rip your heart out and throw it on the floor and stomp on it way of bringing back Bucky. But then we sat back and we said, the problem with this is it's not bulletproof. Somebody's going to come along a year later, 5 years later, 10 years later, and like plug Bucky into cybernetic armor or something like that and turn him into a character, and that's not what we want. So when you bring a character back, it really doesn't matter how well it's done. What matters is what do they do with it from there.
Yeah.
You know, so, and, you know,
at a certain level, you hopefully can, you know, I guess you have to have a certain amount of trust for the people that are going to follow you, and I know that's hard to do in an industry like comics.
Well, I used to be very trusting and wide-eyed and bushy-tailed And you may remember I did a story in the Fantastic Four where I had Terax consumed by the power cosmic. And I figured, you know, that's about as dead as you're ever going to get. He's actually been consumed by what is the driving force of Galactus. This guy ain't coming back. Well, they brought him back. They brought him back in another book. And they did it by basically saying he got better.
Nice.
You know? And I sat there and I looked at that. It was in, what was that book called? Not Teen Titans.
New Warriors.
Well, yeah, right, mm-hmm. New Warriors. And I looked at that and I thought, you know, if you can do that, then literally nothing is bulletproof. And, of course, you know, didn't they bring back Reed and Sue's second child? You know?
I don't know. I haven't read Fantastic Four since you stopped doing it.
So, unfortunately, it's not even nothing is bulletproof. And this isn't new either. I mean, when I was working on The Champions, we did a story involving a character or a threat that had appeared in a Silver Surfer story. One of the best Silver Surfer stories that Stan and John Buscema did, where this noble black guy sacrificed his life to save the entire world by disarming this bomb, and in the process, the whatever radiations from the bomb kill him. You know, and the Surfer buries him and puts a eternal flame on his grave, and the guy's name was Al B. Harper. And in The Champions, when I had no control, I was just the art robot, they did a story where the bomb came back. The bomb was reactivated, and the bomb was threatening the world again. And I said, my God, you know, Al B. Harper died in vain. You've just gutted this wonderful, poignant, heart-wrenching story that Stan and John Buscema did. It's just bad. To do this little death thing that was drawn by this hack artist, you know. It was sad. It was terrible. I complained about it, but nobody listened to me back then because I was just a hack artist. And that's the problem, you know. As I say, you just can't make anything bulletproof unless it's creator-owned. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the difference between Sin City and Elektra. You know, if Frank kills somebody in Sin City, they're going to stay dead until he changes his mind. But if Frank kills Elektra three or four times in Daredevil, when he leaves, they might wait a while, but oops, look, Elektra's back.
Well, you were a part of the original one of those. I mean, you know, Phoenix. I mean, you know, you kind of have to expect it from her name, but you know, we're what, four or five times now.
That's... Oh yeah. Well, we used to say the main reason that we ultimately did that story where Jean Grey was revealed not to have been Phoenix, and Jean came back. Number one, they liked the idea of having Jean be with the original team in X Factor. Mm-hmm. But we'd reached a point, I remember we used to say around the office, Chris had done so many Phoenix stories since her death. I mean, even the Teen Titans X-Men book was a Phoenix story.
And that was great. Yeah.
He'd done so many that we used to say that Phoenix was the least dead character in comics. and the whole Death of Phoenix thing, which people talk about as being so, oh my God, it's so amazing, it's so incredible. Well, it would have been if it had been just that one story and had been left alone thereafter, but it wasn't bulletproof. So Chris brought her back 1,000 times, and everybody else has brought her back 1,000 times.
What's been your favorite death in comics?
My favorite death in comics? Well, the Al B. Harper one that I was just talking about was pretty powerful. There was one that really, like, messed with my head when I was a kid was when Franklin Storm died, Johnny and Sue's father. That was probably the first time that I'd seen a character die nobly and heroically on camera before. We'd seen stuff like Jor-El and Lara die, but it's sort of off in the distance there. And Thomas and Martha Wayne die, but it's 30 years before the story even starts. But I remember I was, what, like 13, 14 when Franklin Storm died, and that messed me up somewhat. You know, oh my God, he's actually dead.
Yeah. I was always a fan of the death of Captain Marvel. I think it's been one of the best kept dead characters in comics.
So. Yeah, the problem was Thanos died at the same time, and he came back.
Well, yeah, Thanos is just too cool, though. You know, well, Jim Starlin wouldn't let him die. So.
You have to be careful with the coolness factor, you know. It's like if the coolness factor starts to rule, then you get people saying, well, you know, Wolverine could defeat Galactus.
Batman could defeat Galactus if he knew Galactus was going to attack ahead of time. If he could get
Given
ready.
Enough, time to put a plan
well,
together.
Well, speaking about something that's coming back, sort of from the dead, there's a new, not Alpha Flight, but Omega Flight coming out. And I know you've sort of talked in the past about maybe not your fondness of Alpha Flight to begin with, but I know a lot of fans, myself included, those first 12 issues of Alpha Flight were
awesome.
They were you know, great stuff. And ever since then, there hasn't really been an Alpha Flight book that has
captured the imagination that that first initial run did.
I tell you, I have no idea what I was doing right in Alpha Flight, because people come up to me and say how great it was and how terrific it was, and I think it's one of the worst periods for my art, and
wow,
not a particularly inspired period for my writing.
Well, we don't like it anymore then.
Okay.
Now that we heard from you.
Well, yeah. You know, we were just talking about, you know, comic book deaths, and I was talking with Sal. We worked together, and I was talking to him at work today that, you know, one of my favorite comic book deaths, and probably the first time I remember a character, you know, a death of a character affected me so much, was when Mac, you know, McDonald died.
Yeah.
In
Death
issue
Guardian,
12.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty bulletproof way of killing him. I mean, it's like okay, this guy is dead. There is no way he's ever coming back. And
yeah.
I thought it was a great plot tool. And reading your response, you thought he was a very uninteresting character.
Yeah.
And his death was a way of making the other characters more interesting.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So the line I used at the time was that the death of the least interesting character generated the most interesting plot line.
It was
Thunderbird.
Poor old Thunderbird. Oh.
Two issues and then goes out like that.
Well, they didn't bring him back. They just brought his brother back. So.
Till he died trying to stop.
I don't know if you know this story, but Thunderbird is the reason Kitty Pryde is named Kitty Pryde.
Really?
How's that for obtuse?
Oh,
please go on.
Yeah. I'm intrigued.
Chris hated killing Thunderbird because he was basically taking over from Len Wein on that, and Len had already plotted out the first few issues, and Len wanted Thunderbird to die in order to indicate that there was a definite threat, in order to say to the readers, this is different from the first time. You know, they're not going to go drifting through blithely beating bad guys and never getting hurt. People are going to get hurt. People are going to die. And Chris hated having to kill this character because it wasn't his idea to kill him. And as long as, from then on, basically, as long as Dave was on the book, as long as I was on the book, probably even after, Chris kept saying, we got to find a way to bring Thunderbird back. We got to find a way to bring Thunderbird back. So we were coming up with this idea for what Shooter ultimately dismissed as the Legion of Substitute X-Men. That there would be a bunch of new characters. And I had come up with this character, this girl who walked through walls, and she didn't have a real name or a power name yet. She just had a look and her powers. And Chris said, well, whatever she does, let's call her Thunderbird. And I said, geez, this is a 14-year-old girl who walks through walls. What does that have to do with Thunderbird, you know, the name Thunderbird? I'm a big believer that names should reflect the characters. But that put the idea of giving her a bird name in my head. So I made a little list, and I was writing down things like, you know, Kitty Hawk, I wrote. And I went, oh, no, you know, not Kitty Hawk, Kitty Pryde, because I had known this gal in college who was named Kitty Pryde. And one time when I first met her, I said, what a great comic book name. You know, that's such a terrific comic book name. And she said, oh, you know, feel free to use it. Boy, does she regret that.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
a lot of greasy guys walking up to her.
As a result of Chris wanting to bring back Thunderbird and saying, let's call this new character Thunderbird, that's how she ended up getting called Kitty Pryde.
Wow.
I went to high school with a girl whose name was Candy Darlin. But I always told her she was going to be a stripper, but I don't know.
There used to be an editor at Marvel. His name was Mark Powers, and I always said that was the greatest comic book name in the history of the universe. You know, Mark Powers. Yes. Who do you turn into at night?
And his answer was, get back to work.
Mr. Powers.
Mr.
Powers.
I just turn into my driveway and go to sleep.
Nice. Well, Kitty Pryde was from Deerfield, Illinois, which is a northwest suburb of Chicago. Were you living in Chicago at the time when you were working on X-Men?
No, actually, I was living in Calgary. Then I hadn't moved to the States yet, but I wanted her to not be from New York.
And why? What, Deerfield? There's nothing
but
a mall.
I said, let's put her in Chicago. And Chris, as Chris was wont to do, I think he had a cousin or something who lived in Deerfield.
Oh, okay.
So he made it Deerfield. And I said, well, okay, as long as it's not New York.
You know, we talked about the New York dynamic in comics. We always feel like Chicago gets shafted because you know, there should be more superheroes in Chicago.
They definitely should. I mean, if you think about it logically, I think Stern and I calculated one time that the superhero population of Marvel was, the Marvel Earth was about 1 in a million, or superpowered was about 1 in a million. And so, you know, what's the population of Chicago these days?
About 8-10 million metro. Yeah.
So there should be 8 or 10 superheroes running around there, right?
We have zero.
We get like
that
we know of. The Great Lake Avengers. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
and they're in Wisconsin.
They were supposed to be goofy and ultimately become cool, but didn't last, unfortunately. I didn't last. But the problem always comes down to the fact that the comic book industry is centered in New York, and most of the people who were doing the creation of characters when it was important to do so lived in New York. I mean, people still live mostly in New York. Even I'm sitting here in Connecticut. I'm about 26 miles from New York. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
It's funny. One of Dustin, who just asked you a question earlier, pulled out of a box West Coast Avengers number 40. Oh, you brought it with you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, West Coast Avengers number 46, which is the Great Lakes Avengers Assemble issue. So.
Yeah.
So always big fans of the Great Lake Avengers here in the Midwest. So, Sal?
Well, we had David Price, who is one of our listeners. He had posted on our
huge fan
of yours. He wanted to know what has been the work you are most proud of during your time as a professional comic book.
Well, it tends to be chunks of work. You know, it tends to be runs on books. I'm very proud of my work on Fantastic Four, obviously. One of the things that I enjoyed the most and still point to, as being particularly proud of, is the first 8 issues of She-Hulk. I think that's some of my best work. And I've done some stuff, you know, I mentioned Batman and Captain America recently. That was a lot of fun, and the Generations, the 2-3 Generations series have been a lot of fun. They're all, you know, I do like to say that there's nothing out there that I'm ashamed of, because everything is the best work that I was capable of doing at the time I did it, but you can still pick the 1 or 2 diamonds here and there, and those would be very high on the list.
Well, speaking of She-Hulk, you know, there were 2 other things as I was trying to get ready for speaking with you, and I kept like going over your previous work and going, wow, you know, it's funny how there was some stuff that you did years ago that, you know, either got canceled or, you know, you had problems with, you know, She-Hulk being one of them. And then the other one, you know, was Northstar being a gay character that you really couldn't ever talk about openly. And now we see a She-Hulk that pretty much follows the pattern that you created with She-Hulk. And we see press releases of great gay characters coming out. Any feelings on either of those two things? I mean, how it's sort of ironic that, you know, however many years ago now that it was, that you seem to have controversy about those things, and now it's
we were being ahead of the curve again.
We were actually going to create a segment for the interview and call it "I Told You So."
Yeah, John Byrne, I Told You So.
Well, I look at some of the stuff that's coming out of Marvel these days, and I feel like I'm still plotting over there. It's kind of scary, but She-Hulk, I haven't really, you know, I don't read the stuff, so I haven't really looked at what's going on. I've been hearing good things about it. Mm-hmm. The gay characters, of course, yes, we should have lots of gay characters. We should have a huge diversity of characters. We should have everything you can possibly imagine. I mean, that's why I created Box. I mean, here's a guy with his legs cut off. Let's make him a superhero. But it was funny, there was an article in the New York Times a few weeks ago about this gay Batwoman, and it went on and on about what a bold move forward it was and what a giant stuff, and there's only been a couple of gay characters before, and I read through it and I said, gosh, you know, I created the first gay superhero and I'm not mentioned anywhere in this article.
Wasn't that what, Rawhide Kid or Two Gun Kid? No.
Well, that's part of the problem too, is that you get that you know, Rawhide Kid was gay, therefore he becomes the first gay character. Well, no, it didn't work that way.
That was retconned.
I always thought the Joker was kind of bi.
Yeah, it's like, I remember people telling me that Kitty Pryde was the first Jewish superhero, and people would say, no, she wasn't. Colossal Boy was the first Jewish superhero. I said, no, Colossal Boy became Jewish after Kitty was created.
Yeah.
He was revealed to be Jewish. It's not the same. It's like Ben Grimm being revealed to be Jewish, which is makes a whole lot of sense to me that Ben Grimm would be Jewish, but it doesn't make him the first Jewish superhero.
Yeah, you can't retcon to the first.
Yeah.
Even though it's comics is all about retconning, and always
it's like people have chided me for Man of Steel, saying that this means Superman wasn't the first superhero anymore. And I go, yes, he was. You know, for God's sakes.
No one went and
burnt
your books.
Back in time and kill Siegel and Schuster.
Well, you said at the beginning or at some point in the show that you love time travel stories. So
I do.
Someone goes back in time and wrecks all those old books, and then
that's right.
Oh,
that's right. I'm going to go back in time, and then I'll be able to say things like, "Well, you know, when Stan and I were creating the X-Men."
Well, you know, on the I told you so. Do you have any nuggets of wisdom for today's comic book readers or young creators coming up to, you know, minds that they may want to sidestep that you see that may be laying out there?
You know, it's harder to do it these days because the industry changes so fast, like from minute to minute. It doesn't seem to be the same industry anymore. Back when I was being the great prophet,
the great and powerful Oz.
Stern used to call me Jiminy Cricket. Actually, he said I was the Jiminy Cricket of the industry, like the conscience of the industry. And it used to be easier to look forward and say, well, like when the direct sales market was introduced and Marvel and DC both started putting more and more product into the direct sales market, and I stood there going, you're closing doors, guys. You know, you're closing doors that will not open again. And that was easy to see, I thought, and easy to predict. I remember describing it as it was as if the whole comic book industry was in a car careening down a cliff road in a thunderstorm, and I was sitting in the back seat going, do you think we should pull over? You know, do you think we should slow down? And everybody else was going, no, this is a great ride. This is terrific. And then the car went off the cliff. And they all turned to me and said, okay, now what do we do? I would say, back there when we were still on the road, I could tell you what to do. But now, and that's pretty much where I find myself now, I look at the industry and say, well, golly, if I had a time machine, yes, I could fix the industry. I could go back and say, don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other thing, all of which I predicted at the time. And I'd make people listen to me. But now, God, I don't know. I don't know what to warn people off from.
Well, you know, I look at the industry now, and while it doesn't have the great sales numbers that it did, you know, 15, 20, 30 years ago, I think the actual craft of comic book making has maybe never been as strong from a whole picture. I think that if you look at the industry from a very wide lens, mm-hmm. that the overall level is very high right now.
I would agree. Oddly enough, though, I see that as a part of the problem, because it's an overemphasis on a part of the production that has never been as important as it is now. The craft was always, well, let's face it, it was always secondary to getting the damn books out on time,
mm-hmm.
and we have seen the craft become more important than getting the damn books out on time. And I think that's been ultimately very damaging. You know, you can't build a readership, you can't build a marketplace if the product isn't there. And, you know, it's one of those things where you wish it wasn't an either or, but the history of the industry seems to teach otherwise, that you can have these spectacularly, beautifully drawn, crafted, amazing books like we see, but you can't have them if you want a monthly product. And that's what this is really supposed to be.
Can't wait until the next podcast? Be sure to check out AroundComics.com for breaking news, reviews, and opinions.
What is it about comics that have kept you excited for 30 years? Why do you keep drawing?
Oh, God, I don't know. I'm just, there's an 8-year-old kid who lives in my head. And every time I sit down at the drawing board, he just freaks out. It's hard to describe, but I said on my website a couple of weeks ago, I tried to put it into words by saying, you know, here I am. I've read comics on and off these days, but I've read comics for for 50 years, and now I'm doing them, and I've been doing them for the last 30 years or so. And when I sit down at the drawing board and draw Batman, it's really Batman. It's not me doodling in my sketchbook, you know, working on this JLA story, for example. I draw Batman. I draw Green Lantern. I draw Black Canary. It's really those characters. This is actually these people who are running around in this imaginary universe doing this stuff. It's the guys I used to read about when I was a kid. And to get to, I always say, to get to play with those toys, boy, it's just, anytime I get, and start to feel bored or start to feel like it's drifting away, I just have to sit back and, well, look at the original art that's hanging on the wall of my studio and say, that's me now. I'm a part of that. And it's just amazing. I mean, whether it's deserved or not, I can sit back and say, I left a permanent mark on the Fantastic Four and Superman and the X-Men. You know, some people will say it was like a dog lifting his leg and leaving a permanent mark, but nevertheless, I left a permanent mark, and it's, I'm now wrapped into that legend, and boy, you can't imagine how exciting that is.
Well, I tell you what, I spend quite a bit of time over at the Image Creator Boards. They're a great collection of young creators there, and there's usually not too much time that passes that your name isn't mentioned by one of them. I was at the B. Clay Moore forum, and he had found a very early cover that you had done and posted it, and you have to look closely to find the signature here, but you know, see if you can figure out who it was. And all of the image creators that went through that post, you know, kind of immediately recognized it, and then they kind of started reminiscing about some of their John Byrne moments growing up. So, you know, that same 8-year-old kid that you say is inside of you that, you know, is so excited about drawing these characters, I think that you had that effect on a new generation of creators that, you know, what they grew up reading was you. And I think that impact is very tangible out there.
That's gratifying. It's always pleasing when people come up and say, you know, you were a great inspiration to me, and it's because of you I'm doing this. And people say, you know, it's because of you I'm a comic book artist, and I usually respond by saying, it's all my fault. But, yeah, it's very gratifying. I'd like to think that maybe Jack Kirby felt the same way when I said that to him. You know,
yeah.
It's because of you, man.
It's because of you. I spend about $200 a month on this crap.
I think tied into that question, how much can you bench press?
How much can I bench press?
Just to lighten it up a bit.
I can barely lift my own weight to get up out of my chair.
Well, I just want to say, personally from me, that when I was a kid, I wanted to be John Byrne when I grew up. I mean, that's who I wanted.
You don't.
Well, but I wanted to draw like John Byrne. I wanted to draw like you. That was my dream, and unfortunately, I didn't have nearly the talent or dedication to ever get there, but nonetheless, your work will always...
Podcasts.
Yeah, I was too busy recording myself in an 8-track or something.
But how many times did you draw the now it's my turn Wolverine picture?
I'm talking
to the rest of the panel here. I probably drew that panel 100 times as a kid, just at least that.
I'm the best at what I do, but unfortunately that's being an accountant, not an artist.
All right, well, enough kissing John Byrne's ass. I have a forum post, another Matt S. in Wisconsin. He asked, he said, I enjoyed your prose work, especially Whipping Boy. Any other novels in the works?
Oh, God, I've got like 20 or 30 novels in the works. It seems like ranging from, you know, 100 pages to just one sentence sitting on my hard drive, but none of them feel like they're going to be the next one. That's the big problem. When the novels happen, they just seem to sort of pour out of me, and bang, suddenly I've written 250 pages, or in the case of Whipping Boy, I wrote 750 pages, and then, but yeah, I hope there's a few more novels.
All right. We've got another post from Equinox here. It says, John, how, if at all, has your art style changed over the years due to the digital tools that have become much more prevalent in comics? Do you still draw everything on paper, or have you implemented any digital rendering processing into your art?
Well, I guess the biggest change that's happened in that direction is the integration of 3D models. 3D computer models that I started doing a few years ago. I did it mostly on Generations. Did it a fair bit on Hidden Years, where I built a whole fleet of Batmobiles. And that was basically just me being anal retentive, where I said, if I build a Batmobile that looks like a drawing of a Batmobile, I can print it out and paste it in, and the car will look the same no matter what direction we're looking at it from. Because it always bugs me when you draw it freehand, and in this panel the hood looks 3 feet longer than it does in that panel, kind of thing. So I think that's probably the single greatest, because I don't do my own coloring, and I still do work in pencil and pen on paper. So that's probably the biggest impact that the digital world has had on my work.
Good to hear. I'm just trying to fill it. Yeah, we're all desperately looking for questions. Yeah. I just have to fill that out there.
We're looking through all your. We've got the omnibus out here, and it's like, oh man, that looks so cool.
Wolverine's claws were slightly shorter in issue number. Can you talk to that for a little bit?
No,
nothing like
God,
that.
God, but I get questions like that. I really do. People will look for the substrata of a fandom that seems to genuinely believe that every single thing that happens in a comic book is planned out, and they want to know why. It was like when I was doing Man of Steel, we got this one letter from this guy very sincerely asking if Man of Steel was one of the things that Siegel and Schuster had planned.
Huh?
Yeah, they did, actually. They left a memo that said, and in 1986, hire some hotshot to revamp it, because it's probably going to need it by then.
After Crisis, of course.
Yeah, After Crisis.
After Crisis. And people will genuinely ask those questions, like, well, Wolverine's claws are apparently longer in this panel than they are in the previous one. Were you trying to indicate that he was kind of withdrawing, or he was less potent, or what?
Yes.
I just... goofed.
It's The Sun Also Rises of comic books.
Here is a really geeky fanboy question. Were you responsible for making the claws like a part of him, as opposed to like coming out of the gloves?
No, that was Chris and Dave.
Okay.
That was in I think X-Men 99 or something.
Come
on, Chris. Really bring some good questions. That was weak.
It was before issue 108, his first one. So, all right, guys, are we all wrapped up?
Well, I was just going to say again, we've been talking to him for 2 hours, and I'm just a little disappointed. I expected,
pissed anyone off?
The crazy John Byrne everybody talks about.
He seems somewhat lucid.
He's not like this crazy old man who just rotten kids and yelling, screaming. He's, intelligent.
You haven't whapped the phone with your cane once?
No. I need to get off the phone, though, because I've got these babies boiling on the stove. They must be done by now.
You have to go skin the rest of the puppies.
It's like nitroglycerin. You just take it off the top,
Nice.
One more question.
John, I just wanted to find out, how soon will DC be publishing your collaboration with Roger Stern on JLA? I saw the pencil scans you had put up there, and they looked phenomenal.
We don't know yet when it's going to come out. It's a five-parter, and I've done the first three, and I think Roger has scripted the first one. And Carlin says when Roger gets the first three fully scripted, we're going to schedule it. It's that wacky idea of having the whole thing done before you schedule it. What a crazy idea!
Wow.
So we don't actually know. I very much doubt that it will be this year at this point, because here we are in September. Maybe the first issue might get out by December, but I kind of doubt it at this point.
Is there anything else that we can look for here coming up?
Yeah, what's on the John Byrne burner right now?
Well, not a lot. I've got this little 10-page story that I'm doing more or less as a favor to the writer. That'll probably be coming out around Christmas, since it's a Christmas story. But I mentioned on my website that having finished on the Atom, I decided that I'd sort of might be fun to sort of pull back and clean the pipes and concentrate on some of these commissions that I've been having a lot of fun with, and just do that for a while. And if somebody comes along and says, "Hey, do you want to do this?" Like somebody was talking to me a few weeks ago about a possible Batman two-parter, and if that actually comes to the point where the editor says, "Would you like to do this?" I probably will, you know, because I always love Batman.
Absolutely.
But right now I'm turning into this old guy who like gets up at 8 o'clock instead of 5:30. You know, it's really kind of strange. I'm living in this sort of zone that I always wanted to get to, and now that I'm here, it's strange and weird, and it makes me feel odd.
Yeah.
I'm not having to chase deadlines constantly, but it's also fun.
Hey, could you see yourself ever working on a monthly book for a prolonged period of time again, or is that?
Yeah, I think so. If the right project came along, I've been talking to a European publisher also about doing a graphic novel adaptation of a famous novel, which I won't mention any more about because that's as far as it's gone, and a couple of other bits and pieces, and we've been negotiating some reprints of Next Men, and if those sell reasonably well, that might be the indication I need that I can bring that back and finally do the last 20 issues.
Yes, please.
Well, I'm
please,
really
please.
Looking forward to that Harry Potter graphic novel. Then.
Oh, yeah.
I'm guessing. Am I
right? I always felt that I was right for that book.
Well, I tell you what, guys. On that note, John Byrne on Harry Potter. We're going to let the poor man go after we have sucked up his entire Friday evening. Mr. Byrne, thank you so much, not just for spending some time with us tonight, but for really everything that you've done in the last 30 years to shape, me personally, my views on what a comic should be. And
sounds like you're going to ask him for money next.
And will you marry me?
Can I borrow 20?
So this is where I get to say all my fault, huh?
Yes, yes, all your fault, all your absolutely. Fault.
But we don't hold it against you at all.
We
really appreciate it.
Sort of. And, it depends on what Wolverine's in next. I swear
yeah.
to God.
Yeah. I see. I don't.
If
get
Wolverine,
sick of Wolverine
pops up in the Flash, I'm gonna be pissed.
Civil War. I'm with Chaykin. So. All right. Well, Mr. Byrne, thank you so
fun.
Much. All right, and hopefully we will talk with you again soon.
Sure, okay. Anytime
you got 2 hours to spare.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Okay, bye.
Hey.
Bye-bye.
Yay. We didn't record any of that. That was a dry run.
Yeah, we got to do it again for real. And there you go, folks. That is the conclusion of our second half of the John Byrne interview.
What a wonderful guest. I was so terrified.
All week.
I was. Like, I couldn't sleep. I just kept dreaming, like, horrific, horrible nightmares that John Byrne was going to call me a fat loser at one point.
When I told you that John Byrne had agreed to be on the show, your response was so underwhelming. I was crushed.
I was very nervous because, like I said, I mean, if there's one guy out there that when I was a kid that was my idol in comics, it was John Byrne, and I was so afraid of a moment. Where, you know, it's like you're always afraid of meeting your heroes.
Yeah,
meeting
that baseball player that you've idolized your entire life and finding out that he's a total ass.
And you finally meet Carrot Top.
Yeah.
I met Carrot Top. I actually shared a drink with Carrot Top in Des Moines, Iowa.
With a double straw, like a milkshake? What the hell?
Hey, look at this. Share a drink.
Shared drinks.
Oh,
multiple
God.
Drinks.
Had drinks.
Yeah.
But you each drank one half of
cement
each one.
Mixers, you and Carrot Top getting plowed.
That was bizarre.
But it was a great. I mean, he was so cool. And
you held yourself I got to watch in the wings.
Thanks, Dustin.
I was a little scared. I had a hard time.
All right, guys. So thank you, everyone out there, for listening. Hopefully that was very entertaining. And for new listeners, because I have a feeling that we had some folks that have never heard who the hell we were that may have checked us out. Please come back. And
people
and
that know John Byrne that don't know us.
Yeah, what sounds like
I don't
already?
Know.
Oh, yeah, you think? Yeah. So hopefully it was fairly entertaining, and you'll come back to the Around Comics Roundtable. We do have a couple listener emails that I'd like to read before we conclude this episode. Tom, why don't you lead us off there?
Hey, guys. Just got into your podcast after noticing John Suntress was on. Big fan of Word Balloon. Really enjoying what you're doing.
John's actually here.
John's actually here, yeah. If I ever make my way from Australia to Chicago, seeing you guys at Dark Tower will definitely be on the top of my list of things to do. Can I note that there probably are better things to do in Chicago on a Friday night? We'd meet you on a Saturday, like during the day,
right,
if you come all the way from Australia, let us know and I'll have lunch with you like on a Saturday, but please don't
come to
feel
Dark Tower
obligated
on a
to spend
night.
A Friday
yeah,
here.
And that's but that's from
but
that's from,
thank you, that's really nice.
And that was from Lee Webb.
I got one here. This is just wondering if you guys had seen the Ultimate Gag Reel on the Ultimate Avengers 2 special features. It was so hilarious, it had my wife and I crying, and she doesn't even know Jack about comics. Except now she knows that Iron Man loves ribs. That was Jimmy.
And if anything should make you pro-registration is that Iron Man loves ribs, man. Fucking ribs are great.
Ribs are great.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
I'm with Iron Man. Ribs are great.
Ribs are great.
All right, Dustin.
Has anybody seen that?
Oh, no, I've got the DVD. I've got the DVD. I'll go home, I'll watch it this weekend.
I was going to buy it, like, the other day. I was thinking about buying it, and I hadn't gotten around to it yet. But Unfortunately, Jimmy, we haven't seen it yet, but... Now I'm going to go out and buy it just because...
It.
We'll give you our report next week.
I don't even give
week.
A shit about the cartoon, but I'm going
to
watch the game.
Go straight to the bonus features.
Mm-hmm. I want to read this next one.
Can I read this next one?
We had spoken at Wizard World... Oh, it says, hi. We had spoken at Wizard World Chicago at the Marvel booth, and I finally got a chance to hear your podcast. I think you do a great job. I especially like the way you have panels, so more voices, and focused topics, so better indicator whether someone will be interested in a show or not. Thanks for introducing me to podcast. That's from Joanna Draper Carlson, who does comicsworthreading.com, her blog about she's been reviewing comics for like 12 years. She used to work at DC Comics, and there's a funny story about me and her and meeting at Marvel and everything. You can go back and listen to that, but I just wanted to give a shout out to Joanna.
Yeah, that was Joanna. Joanna was a very pleasant person.
Oh, and I've emailed her since, and she's going to be on the show at some point.
Awesome. I really enjoyed meeting her. Right.
Dustin, you read it.
Hey, guys.
More emotion.
Oh, sorry. Okay, hold on. Hey, guys. Before this contest, I was but one of a massive listeners who enjoy every episode but failed to post, email, or call the show. I'm guessing that's your contest?
Yeah, it was the Write Tom's Comic.
Yeah.
Write My Comic.
I have followed your exploits since your roving reporter guest podcast on Comic Geek Speak. And now marvel at what has become a podcasting juggernaut.
Jesus.
We're the juggernaut, bitch.
Tom, you said never ever say that.
I know. I feel fucking dirty just doing that. That sucked. Sorry, everyone.
Yes, all of you are knowledgeable and witty, and you conduct insightful creator interviews. But the source of the Around Comics magic lies in the three friends who meet in a room, turn on a mic, and have the time of their lives. Thanks for letting us listen in. Fernando Tobian.
Pronounced Miller.
Prescott, Wisconsin, but a Vikings fan. Sorry, Tom.
Well, not everyone can be perfect.
Yeah. What's the major misconception in that email?
That we're friends.
Yeah.
Three people who tolerate each other's press. As when the microphone isn't on, we actually all go to separate corners of this. We talk on our phones. We're all trying to organize our own podcasts.
No, that is so untrue.
You guys love me. I look forward to every Friday. It is my chance to sit around with my buddies and talk about
and
comics.
It's really,
and have a beer.
It's really cool that you guys are letting my Japanese girlfriend sit here and watch us record the podcast.
Well, Yoko?
That's because she dresses the way she does.
She sits and watches us.
I love manga.
Hello.
All right, guys. A couple quick announcements here. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. The CPN is a collection of some of the best comic book podcasts on the net. You can learn more about the network and find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com. The forum, once again, everybody that helped out with the John Byrne questions, we really appreciate it. You were all fantastic, and the forum is something that I enjoy spending time at every day. So if you have not had a chance to yet, please check out the forum at aroundcomics.com. Our September contest, we talked about it at the beginning of the show. It's the Trivia Challenge. Check that out. The Listener LCS, if you have a chance, download our PDF flyer and put that up in your comic shop, and we will mention you on the show. Vote for us at Podcast Alley, and run by the iTunes Music Store if you have a chance. And as I say, every episode, be as cool as Andy Parks. That's and right. Leave us a review. Sal?
I just wanted to say thank you to John Byrne.
Thanks
for just being a fantastic creator for 30 years and just a great guest, and we had so much fun talking to him.
I'm going to go read some of his stuff now. I'm kidding. He sounded really cool. He did some really cool stuff, I heard. Well, I've already read much of it.
Way to just push that.
Push that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm sure John.
I've read tons of it.
I know.
Yes. All right.
Who hasn't? If you haven't, you're...
You're not reading comics.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell you're doing.
I'd like to thank everyone that joined us today. John Byrne, Sal, Tom, as always, you guys are awesome. I love you guys.
You're all right. Tom and I talk about you after the show, and we think you're okay.
Dustin, Kyle, Mark Beatty, the manager here. Who else did we have?
Dave Wachter.
Dave Wachter. John Suntress is milling around here. So we mean it. If you're in the Chicago area, come on in. We're here every Friday. Everyone, have a fantastic rest of your week. We'll be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
I didn't say anything that time.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for this show provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week, where the panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.